you need to calm down. She's like, this is a stressful sport.
Like, yeah, man.
Kendrick have a dream. Welcome to the RVA Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. This is episode 9, the real episode 9. Last week I lied and said it was episode 9, but this is really episode 9. And this week we're going to talk about Dayton, LaSalle, the stressful LaSalle overtime win. We'll do a little bit of trivia. We'll do something new. I'm going to ask Aaron to make a prediction about something that's not a win or a loss. Talk about basketball around the Commonwealth, and then look at the upcoming two games, one against Fordham, one against Richmond. Does that sound like everything?
Sounds great.
Okay. So, let's start with Dayton. Definitely the less memorable of... Well, only maybe in retrospect. The less memorable of the last two games, but only because the LaSalle game was such a, like, heart... I don't know what it was. A heart attack on a stick.
Stressful.
But so let's go back to Dayton, though.
Yeah, it was a good week in Ram Nation. Two solid wins one was a blowout and one was about as close as you can, close and back as forth as you can possibly get. But the Dayton win was really good. You know, it's a very difficult arena to play in, mm-hmm. and the Rams just looked really good. They got a lot out of Jaquan Lewis, Melvin Johnson, and Jordan Burgess. They went 7 of 10 from 3-point range. And, the Rams hit a couple early three-pointers, and that really, you know, sort of set up the – gave them some spacing on the offensive end and allowed them to really score inside the lane in the second half.
And Lewis had, 3 of 4 from three-point, I think?
Yeah, Lewis was 3 of 4, Melvin Johnson was 2 of 3, and Jordan Burgess was 2 of 3. And Jordan Burgess, in both games, came out and hit, I think, the first shot of the game mm-hmm. from the same spot on the floor. You know, and it's a nice thing. I think the nice thing about this game is sometimes, not to get too deep into the analysis too early, but sometimes I think the Rams hit a couple of those three-pointers early, and then they keep taking them, and then they, you know, what was once 50% is suddenly 25%.
Right.
And I think something they did really well this week was using those three-pointers early to really make the opposing team respect them on the perimeter, and then allowing, you know, Breonte Weber and Trayvon Graham to go to work getting to the rim, or Javonte Redick. so those three guys that I mentioned earlier sort of, well, Jaquan Lewis was really great in the second half, but those three guys really set the table from range early, and then Trayvon Graham, who finished with 14 points, Javonte Redick, who finished with 18 points, and Breonte Weber, who had a really, really solid game, finished with 18 points, good work inside the lane.
Yeah.
It was great, too, because, I mean, the Rams forced a lot of turnovers, but they got a lot done in the half court, which is sort of one of the themes this week.
Yeah.
One of the big concerns recently for the Rams is their inability to score in the half court, and they did that both games. So, good win. Even more lopsided than the 14-point final margin suggests. Fans left the stadium, started leaving the stadium with 5 minutes left. And that's a loyal little fan base. So.
Yeah, and this was a, like you said, it was a tough place to play. It was a true away game, which the Rams have had trouble with a little bit in the recent games. So it was nice to see, I think. It's always nice to see, like, a solid victory, but this one especially away. And leading up to the LaSalle game, it was nice to build a little bit of momentum, whether you believe momentum exists or not. It was nice to come away with a win from Dayton. Because we had talked last week about if we could walk away from LaSalle and Dayton 1-1, that'd be pretty great.
Yeah, it would be nothing to...
sneeze at?
Sneeze at, exactly. No, but, you know, I think in my preview of the Dayton game, I talked about turning a good game into a good week, into a good month, and maybe if they hadn't have won this game so dominantly and maybe figured some things out about themselves, that could have been the difference in 1 point, and then you're looking at a loss at LaSalle. So with a game that close, hopefully the lessons they learned in Dayton helped them win that game at LaSalle.
Anything else about Dayton?
It was just an all around good win. If if you didn't feel good watching that one, then maybe your expectations for the Rams are a little unreasonable. Dayton's a really good team. You know, I think they're 1-4 maybe now in the conference, but they're much, much better than the conference record suggests.
Yeah. I watched this at Pig and Pearl on Broad Street, drinking beers, and it was nice because it was not stressful at all.
Yeah.
Like, I could drink beers, I could chat. The game really wasn't ever in doubt. I got close in the middle, I think, Do you remember the halftime score? I don't think it was another game for the close halftime score.
No, no, Charlotte, it was 36 to 27.
Yeah, so it was never really in doubt. Good game to drink cheap beers. I was into it. And then,
so let's talk about the exact opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
So the exact opposite. The LaSalle game I watched in my basement alone with no one around until Valerie came down and sat with her, like she was just bouncing her knees like the whole entire like overtime periods. Like, you need to calm down. She's like, this is a stressful sport. I was like, yeah, man.
Well, let's start by saying this: if you did not watch this game, turn off the podcast right now. Go to ESPN3 and watch the game. You will not regret it.
Yes,
it's an instant classic. I'll be talking about this one, I think, for years to come. I mean, just in... it's probably one of the best coach games I've ever watched. I mean, it was like watching a chess match on the court like I've never seen before. I'm a huge fan of Dr. John Giannini. I mean, he played a great game. LaSalle played a great game and beat VCU in the Siegel Center last year. You know, this was just as back and forth as a game could possibly be. Just the tactics were great back and forth. It was great because both teams had individual performers who, you know, just put these performances of a career together, you know?
Yeah.
And to watch that and to have it go back and forth like that is really special. You know, I even said afterwards it's a shame. It's almost a shame that any one team had to lose.
Almost.
And one team had to win. Almost. I mean, because I really felt that way. And in a lot of ways, I feel like LaSalle is one of the best equipped teams to deal with havoc because they have really, really good guards, and then they also have the physical presence to match up. So, I mean, just, I don't know that I've ever watched a game like this where VCU was up 11 in the first half.
Yeah.
Then LaSalle was up 10 in the second half.
With only like 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, they were up 6 with a minute 4 remaining.
Yeah.
You know, and then the game goes to double overtime. I can't imagine a more, you know, like a 15-round prize fight of a basketball game. I can't imagine anything more like that. And it was just truly a joy to watch.
Yeah, it really was. And it felt, early on, I started, like, it looked like the Rams were going to run away with it. It looked like they had kind of capitalized from their victory at Dayton. And mm-hmm. It was like, hey, this is going to be another one of these things where Ross is going to drink cheap beers. Relaxed.
Yeah, they did a really, really great job in the first half of limiting seniors, the two seniors and leading scorers, Tyreek Dern and Tyrone Garland, who averaged 30-something points between the two of them per game. I think they didn't get their first field goal until the three, or first points until the 3 minute mark, and maybe a field goal.
Yeah.
One field goal in the first half between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you've got Tyrone Garland who I can't remember exactly how many points he had at halftime, you know, but less than one handful.
Yes.
And he finishes with
30, I think, right?
30. Yeah. I mean, he really went off in the second half and gave VCU a lot of problems, and as did Tyreek Dern.
Garland was especially unstoppable, I felt like, and kind of the star, the visual star. Like,
oh, absolutely. I mean, it was brilliant. And this is the really impressive thing. I mean, when you consider that between the two of them, I mean, Tyreek Dern played 49 of 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And Tyrone Garland played 42 minutes. You consider their usage percentage, you know, the possessions they ate up, and they only had 4 turnovers between the two of them.
Yeah, that's...
that's incredible. Wow. Tip of the horns to them. I mean, that's incredible. I can't think of any backcourt that's had any sort of performance like that. I mean, Michigan's backcourt took VCU to school, but still turned over the ball way, way more than that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think Mike Leach did a really good job of sort of capturing the whole magic of this. Like, Havoc really didn't do that much. I mean, Coach Smart talked about the cumulative effect. Obviously, like, if you go to a double overtime game,
yes,
VCU's going to have an advantage.
Yep.
Especially when you have your point guard, the opposing team's point guard, playing 49 out of 50 available minutes.
Yep.
But it wasn't a game where, I mean, 16 turnovers in 50 minutes is not that bad at all. That's really, really impressive against Havoc. And the Rams found another way to win, and that was with tough rebounding, efficient scoring, especially in inside two-point range, which they haven't done very well this season. It was like a different kind of win for them, which is really exciting for people who follow the team closely to see that, hey, this team, this isn't a one-trick pony.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen in a long time the Rams kind of feed one player just like to the exclusion of almost everybody.
Yeah.
And, like, so, clearly yeah. Trayvon Graham. So we need to talk about Trayvon Graham. Absolutely. He ended the game with 34 points. He played 44 minutes. Like, he was on the court forever. And once it got into, I mean, really the end of the game and then the two double over or the two overtimes, like, it was clear. It was like a great running back, you know? Like, it was clear where the ball was going. And it was clear what was going to happen. And nobody could do anything about it.
Yeah, so I guess the key thing here is to sort of set the stage. I mean, LaSalle went to the Sweet 16 last year. Yep. And part of the reason I believe they went to the Sweet 16 is because Steve Zak, he's 6'11", great shot blocker. He got injured. I'm not to say this is not to say addition by subtraction or he hurts the team anyway, but that really forced them to play with a lot of four guard lineups. And I thought that was really, really, it was clearly really effective. I mean, they gave Wichita State, who went to the Final Four, a run for the money in the Sweet 16, and they were really one of the surprises of the entire tournament. Zak is back, and so now they used a lot of bigger lineups, especially in the first half. But then Jarrell Wright kept getting into foul trouble.
Yeah.
And so I think the Rams were really getting punished by this four-guard lineup until the end when Zak, who's 6'11", didn't have the foot speed to guard Graham. They would just isolate Trayvon Graham against Steve Zak. I mean, I don't know how many, like 10 plays in a row maybe?
Yeah.
And basically what they'd do is everyone would just get out of the way. They would have Javonte Redick maybe a couple feet off the right block. They would isolate Graham, who would do spin move. I mean, every single time, he did the exact same thing.
Yep.
He would just use the combination of his speed and strength to get past Zak and to either score 2 points, get fouled, or Javonte Redick would come in and clean up the boards. Yep. And so those two combined for VCU's 14 last points of regulation. And
that's
so,
awesome.
I mean, it's awesome because, I mean, Trayvon Graham just put the team on his back
yep.
in a way I've never seen before. Well, in a way I haven't seen since the Virginia game.
Yeah. And that was like he decided at one moment to win the game at that moment. And this was he...
Well, if you look at the box scores, if you look at, like, I think he had 2 steals, 2 assists, I mean, a couple free throws. I mean, the last couple minutes of that game, he really took it over. I feel that way about both games.
And except for this was the last...
Oh, 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, and it was nothing. There was almost... It was like one man on the court. That's not really true, but, you know, it was awesome to watch.
Well, what was
like,
the final? Yeah, what was the final score of that other game? It was like in the 50s, right?
Yeah,
I gotta pull it up here. It's 59-56, right? 59-56, and so Trayvon Graham had 34 points. So to compare them, yeah, you're right. It's not really fair. But really, so I mean, there are 3 performances that really stand out to me. Obviously, Trayvon Graham,
yeah.
34 points, 12 rebounds. Javonte Redick had 27 points, 15 rebounds, in a really efficient night, and he made a couple of big-time plays. If he can keep playing like that, watch out, 8-10.
Yeah.
And then Rob Brandenburg,
mm-hmm.
who was quiet most of the game. He had one of the best drives of the game, and it was like just the sheer athleticism. He was like, do that every single time, man.
Please. He is the fastest man alive.
Yes. He is so fast and so athletic. You know, and everybody talks about Bronte Weber's vertical leap, but I think Brandenburg had the record before Bronte Weber broke it. And he's
yeah.
got like a 42-inch vertical leap. But, so, LaSalle is up 80-79. Trayvon Graham steps up to the line. There's 5.2 seconds remaining. He hits the first one to tie it at 80 and misses the second one.
Yeah.
And... LaSalle gets the ball to Steve Zak under the basket with plenty of time to score. And Rob Brandenburg recovers and sort of holds him under the basket. And that was the play that stopped the game-winning shot and forced it to his first ever time.
Yeah, I mean, he missed a point-blank layup first, right? He took a shot and missed it, and then Rob kind of like...
Well, he was there, I thought, before the... He did a really good job of getting into this angle where it wasn't going to be automatic,
yeah.
which it could have been if he had not made the heads-up play. And then he hit those two. He hit back-to-back 3-pointers in the second overtime, which basically, I mean, that just broke the spirit of the sound, put
yep.
the game out of reach.
I felt like this game was called by the refs pretty good or in favor of VCU. Or, like, I think it could have been, you could have maybe called something on Rob at that last play you're just talking about. He zoomed in super fast because he's the fastest man alive. And he zoomed in. I was like, oh, God. He's going to foul that guy, and we're going to lose on a free throw by a big, huge, tall dude. But they didn't. And they kind of let him play throughout most of the game, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that, like, plotting sense that I've gotten in a couple of the games this year. So that was cool to watch. It was, like you keep saying, it was like a gem of a game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the refs got out of the way. I mean, this is the kind of game that Georgetown game could have been.
Yeah.
If the refs had decided to swallow their whistles. But instead, they called 61 fouls and made it, even for a Georgetown fan, they won the game 84-80, made it unwatchable.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, this is what basketball should be, you know, and I think the refs are starting to forget the mission from the NCAA to arbitrarily upscoring. I mean, defense is fun.
Yeah, especially when it's defense like this.
Yeah, but I mean, I like watching this, like, old-school Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I like watching Virginia. I like watching St. Louis. So you're not going to get – I mean, just upping the number of fouls per game so there are more free throws so that the games are suddenly in the 70s instead of the 60s doesn't make basketball better.
Yeah, makes it far worse.
I'd rather watch a slower-paced team that doesn't foul than an up-tempo game where there are 45 to 60 fouls.
Yeah, totally.
So all this effort, you know, scoring's way up. All it was free throws, and it was really, really annoying.
Yeah.
You know, and
My mom, speaking about tempo, my mom's an Illini fan. She grew up an Illini fan, and so she watches a lot of Big Ten basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not recent, but over the last half decade, become a VCU fan, and now watches a lot of VCU basketball. And she's, just the other day, she was like, "This is so much better to watch than Big Ten basketball. It's so slow." And they were just like, you know, lollygag up the court and set up their offense. And she's like, "Ugh, I'm so tired of watching that. I just love this up-tempo stuff way better." I was like, "That's right."
Well,
because it's more fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. I love watching VCU. But growing up in Indiana and being a lifetime Big Ten fan, I follow two teams. I admit it. Some people believe in Monfamity.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be Monfamous.
I don't think I believe in Monfamity.
I mean, I know I like VCU more thanks to the 2012 NCAA tournament. I thought that was gonna be a really big decision for me, and it wasn't. But for me, it's like, I just can't get enough basketball.
Yeah.
Like I love VCU, and I follow it, you know, more than most. And I just can't get enough of it. And so it's nice having this whole different thing where they play basketball in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
Where I can go, like, satiate this insatiable desire in a different way. So.
Yeah. Let's see. I had at least one more thing, maybe two more things to talk about LaSalle. We would be remiss to not mention that Tyrone Garland could be playing for the Hokies right now.
Yeah.
So that's a huge bummer.
I mean, what if we put together, like, last year's squad?
Yeah.
For last year's Virginia Tech squad, including transfers, where you have Eric Green, Tyrone Garland, Jarrell Eddy, Montrezl Harrell, and Dorian Finney-Smith starting.
Yeah, guess what? That's a really good team.
that's an NCAA team in a heartbeat. That's got to be really tough to watch.
Yeah, it's super tough. We'll talk about basketball around the time. Maybe we'll just talk about it now. But, like, so they lost. Hokies lost. At home to Wake Forest.
People are freaking out about that.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It sucks to be the stat sheet. You're on the stat sheet as Wake Forest hasn't won an away game in two calendar years, and now they're 1 in 1,000 away games, and the one is Virginia Tech. Like, that sucks. Like, I agree that it's not as big of a disaster as people are saying, but it just sucks to be the stat, you know?
They're in a tough place. You know, I'm not ready to give up on James Johnson. I think he's a good coach who's doing the best he can with the situation that he's presented.
Yeah, it's tough.
But there are people that have already given up on him.
I like him too. I think his job is over because they just hired the new AD. They hired the AD away from Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Whitcott Babb, I think. Is that his name? Or Babb Whitcott? I don't know. I need to look it up. But, like, hired the AD away from Cincinnati, and it just feels like that will be his big, like, I'm now the new AD, and here's my first thing that I will do. So,
the timing for it's tough. I mean, if you're gonna slash and burn, you don't do an internal hire.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's like they kind of like didn't really slash and burn all the way.
Yeah, and he was kind of an internal hire. Like, he had taken a job at Clemson for like 2 weeks,
right?
And so they were like, "Oh, bringing in the guy." The whole thing was a disaster.
But, I mean, I consider it an internal hire.
Sure.
And not only that, I think, you know, a lot of things haven't gone his way.
And,
it's just like...
So like this ties into the other thing I want to talk about, the LaSalle game, where the Hokies have seen such crazy injury. Like, everyone gets injured on that team. Mm-hmm. And this has been the case for the last 3 or 4 years. Like, everyone is always getting injured sometime. Yeah. And the Rams have been, like, super lucky, exceedingly lucky. And I wonder if it's all related. I mean, would you say so? There's been very few devastating injuries. Like, Terrence Shannon is injured now. Jordan Burgess has a knee thing.
Right. Confession. I had a whole series of questions I was going to ask Coach Smart last week. Slept through the press conference. Hashtag college.
College.
No, I mean, it is pretty incredible when you consider the physical game, the physical brand of basketball, of Havoc. You know, how few serious injuries there have been. When you consider just... That's me knocking on wood before I have this, but I think you also have to be thankful, and there's a time to be thankful, and it's, you know, there hasn't been an ACL injury.
Yeah.
There haven't been any serious broken bones. I mean, just off the top of my head, when you're thinking about serious injuries that have caused people to miss more than 5 games, I mean, you have the Jordan Burgess sprained knee. I think he missed 5 games for that. You have Brandon Rozell breaking his hand, and he missed a couple weeks, but then came back in time for the Final Four and was back. I mean, played the best basketball of his life after that in the same season. So, I mean, they've been very, very fortunate with injuries. That's not to say guys don't get banged up. I mean,
yeah.
Melvin Johnson had that hip-pointer issue a lot of last season. Jaquan Lewis has had that thumb extension problem. You know, he's been wearing a brace all season. And obviously, Jordan Burgess is still wearing a brace, but they've been very, very lucky.
And so, how is tying that into injuries in LaSalle and overtime games? I wonder how much of that is conditioning and how much of that is the training staff and, like... It's becoming clear to me, at least, and to a lot of people that watch the bat. Like, my Valerie was talking about this too, about how, like, they just don't seem tired. And, you know, that's like Coach Smart's whole thing. Like, got to be conditioned so you get this cumulative effect of Havoc. So clearly, VCU is in an advantage situation in the second overtime because they're just in better shape. You know, and I wonder like how much of that is that they have an excellent training staff.
Well, I think they do. I mean, the first thing you have to say is like they do. If you look at just the conditioning and the lack of injuries, they clearly have been very successful. I think there's a certain element that is luck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of injuries are just
freak
accidents. Things. It's, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then I also, in terms of like being tired, I mean, Coach Smart has rules about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that because I was telling
Valerie. Every now and then you'll see guys with hands on their knees, but they're not supposed to do that. If you fall down on the ground, you're supposed to like get up within a second or something like that. You're supposed to. I mean, and the players are very, very committed to immediately helping up their teammates. Not that other teams aren't, but you can tell, I mean, they're not going to walk over and help someone up. They're going to run over and immediately help someone up. And I think there's a certain psychological element to it that, you know, Tyrone Garland and Tyreek Dern, you know, those guys are sweating up a storm and have their hands on their knees. And I think Coach Smart wants his guys to be like, even if they are tired, to be like, we're not.
Yeah, if you go back and watch on ESPN3 the game, this LaSalle game, like once you get to the second overtime when they're shooting free throws, those LaSalle dudes are like sucking wind, hunched over, and all the VCU dudes are just chilling, like standing there.
Yeah.
And Valerie's like, what's going on? I was like, they're not allowed to like touch their knees. Like, they can't do that. Like, they'll be in so much trouble if they bend over and like tug on their shorts, you know?
Well, and I think it was after that game, Coach Smart, he said something along the lines of like, would you guys rather be playing a double overtime game or climbing through ice water in a raft doing skill training in the middle of summer? And I think the entire team was like, clearly this, obviously. I think Coach Roos does an incredible job. And they have like really creative things they do. You know, like they do the off-campus workouts on Friday. And for them, it really is, it's more than just like being fit. It's a mindset. It's an element of victory.
Yeah, I hope they compensate him well and keep him here on staff.
I agree with that 110%. Now that we've talked so well about him,
I know
the Hokies are going to come after him.
Do we have anything else to say about LaSalle?
No, it's...
God, that was awesome, huh?
Rewatch the game. I'm going to rewatch the game. If you haven't seen it, watch it. If you've seen it, rewatch it.
Yeah. All right, you ready for trivia?
I suppose.
Okay. Trivia, here we go. Question number one. Still don't have a saxophone jingle by you, by the way. I'm still waiting on it. All right, question number one. This season, VCU is 2-0 in overtime games. What's Coach Smart's record in overtime games at VCU?
7-4.
Correct.
He lost his first three and he's 7-1 since then.
Yeah. Pretty incredible.
With that one loss in the last 8 games coming to Richmond.
Yep.
So we'll talk about that in a minute.
I think it speaks to all that stuff we just talked about. Mm-hmm. The longer you play the Rams, the worse you're going to be at a worse advantage.
Yeah.
All right, that was good. That's you're 1-for-1. That's rare. All right.
Hey, now.
Hey. Trevion Graham scored 34 points, a career high, against LaSalle. What's the fewest number of points he scored this year, and against what team?
Oof.
And if you can get the team, I'll give it to you, because it's hard to, like, recall point totals.
We're reaching that point in the season where they all just start to blur together for me. I know he had one specifically tough game. Was it the Florida State game?
It was Virginia Tech. He had 7 points against Virginia Tech.
That's his low this season?
Yeah. So here's a bonus that might also blow your mind. In the last 2 years, how many games has Trevion Graham scored in single digits? It's probably no way for you to know for sure, but when I tell you...
4. It's less than a handful.
It's crazy. So the last 2 years, he's scored in single digits. VT, Akron in the tournament, he had 6 points. UMass last year.
The team really suffered for that one.
Yeah. And a lot of these, it didn't matter, you know? Like, so UMass last year, he scored 3. I don't know if that was a win.
Which one?
I think
regular season or the...
I think the tournament. Point,
the Justin Toyo game?
Yeah.
I'm dubbing that the Justin Toyo game.
George Washington last year, 9 points. Stetson, and that's the later, that's like near the end of the season. And
okay.
So then you got to go all the way back to the beginning of last season for Stetson, 7, and Wichita State, 3.
So that was 7 total.
6 total in the last 2 years.
And one of those is a loss.
Yeah.
The Wichita State game.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
Like, that talk maybe a little too much crap. I get a little upset when he has slow starts, because I feel like he could be doing better, but honestly, maybe it doesn't matter because he's scoring 10 points in every single game, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is, like, he takes more shots than everyone else, which Coach Smart wants.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's got a very consistent game, and this is not going to be his last 30-point game in his career.
No. And he's...
Especially next year when he's doesn't have Javonte Redick there.
Yeah.
We're going to see him put up some pretty gaudy numbers.
He's a junior.
Yeah. Not only that, he's young.
Yeah.
His birthday is like in October. He turned 18 like 3 weeks before his freshman season.
That's crazy.
And he's a man.
Yeah. All right. So that was mind-blowing to me. Are you ready for question number 3?
Yeah, 1-1. Yeah.
There are 3 teams in the Atlantic 10 with a Ram as a mascot.
Yeah.
And there's one other non-Atlantic Atlantic 10 team that has a Ram as a mascot.
Yeah.
Can you name all 4? And I have a bonus, and I'll say that all of this information comes from a BuzzFeed article, so you have to take that with like a listicle-sized grain of salt, because it might just be lies. So the first part is, name the 4 Rams.
3.
There's 4. There's
3. Oh, 4 total. 3. Four. I thought you meant 3 in the Atlantic 10. Okay. VCU,
yep.
Rhode Island, Fordham, and Colorado State.
There it is. Yeah. That was good. All right. Colorado State.
Which is, in case you didn't hear, that's where Shane Bohannon is transferring from Louisville, if you care about that kind of stuff.
Mm.
That's the news of the day. Big news of the day.
All right. Another data point is VCU currently holds the Rams horn, which is a trophy that I just made up.
I like that a lot.
When you beat Fordham in Rhode Island. Like, whoever of the 3 A-10 teams has the best record against it. We'll have to come up with some sort of tiebreaker situation, too, in case they split. But last year, VCU beat both Fordham and Rhode Island, clinching the first ever Rams horn.
Yeah.
And then...
they'll have a chance here in the next 10 days
to
do it again.
Yep, they play in the next 2 weeks, they'll play them. And I think this year, they play both... at home, is that right?
Yeah. So they play Fordham on Wednesday, and then they play Richmond on Saturday, and then they play Rhode Island next Tuesday and Wednesday.
So Rams horn is in contention. And then here's the bonus question.
We gotta get a picture of that or something.
We gotta
Photoshop Friday, man.
All right, I'll wait to see it. I'm excited. So here's the bonus for that one: is what's the most common mascot in the nation?
Oh man, is it Bulldogs?
It is. It's the Bulldogs. Man, you're killing it this week. So the Bulldogs are 15 teams in America with Bulldogs as the mascot. Alabama, A&M, Bryant, Butler, Fresno State, the Citadel, Drake, Gardner Webb, Georgia, Gonzaga, Louisiana Tech, Mississippi State, UNC Asheville, Samford, South Carolina State, and Yale.
Well, then you got, I mean, the Hoyas are...
Yeah.
Then there are teams that have the Bulldogs, which, you know, it's what I said before the season. I'd like to see VCU do. Maybe it's too soon. But if they became the Havoc but kept the Ram...
Yeah.
Or just Havoc, I think...
Kind of like how, like, Stanford is, like, Cardinal, but they have the tree. They have the weird tree.
Well, and Crimson Tide.
Yeah, with the elephant.
With the elephant. And, which, by the way, I think is one of the coolest animals to have.
An elephant?
I really think that's cool.
We had
side note.
This is a tangent. We were at the Alabama Tech game, not this year, last 2 years ago, whatever. And Alabama fans were super nice for tailgating. They were so super nice. And then, but this one guy was super drunk. He comes up and he goes, "Hey, what the hell's a Hokie?" And then one of our tailgate friends was also super drunk. He said, "What the hell's an elephant doing with your team?" Kind of trailed off, and then they both like went their separate ways. But I agree, elephant's cool. So,
don't drink and cheer.
Yeah. Only consume alcohol if you're of the appropriate age. And so I'd like to do a new thing. Those are my three questions with some bonus questions. I'd like to do a new thing where I just really have a good stat, and I want to share the stat with you. And I'd like you to make a prediction involving this stat. So this is called prognostications. How many blocks will Alonzo Nelson Adoda, who plays for Richmond, have against VCU? And I have some crazy background. While you think about that, let me talk about the background. So he had 62 blocks his freshman year. He had 49 so far this year, and that's 111 total. That's good for number 8 all-time at Richmond. He's done that in 54 games, and everyone above him on that list has done it in 101 or more games. The all-time leader at Richmond is Garrett Darius, and he had 200... This is an insane stat, too. He had 231 blocks in 116 games.
In the 70s?
No, it was in the early 2000s.
That's really impressive.
Unless I'm lying,
I was doing like stats last night, and Javonte Vedic just recently got up into the top 10 at VCU for blocks all time. It's like outside of like Redick and Larry Sanders, all those guys are from the pre-3-point line.
Yeah.
Era.
I'll have to double check to make sure I'm not making up his.
No, I'd heard stuff. I heard a similar thing. I mean, that's
the guy. Yeah. I think I looked on KenPom. He's 33 in the nation in block percentage, and it's something crazy like 10% of, like he just blocks 10% of all shots. Like what?
When he's on the court.
Yeah, that's insane.
That is really insane.
And he's averaging, just to give you a little. I think he's averaging like two-ish. It might even be 2.5 at this point in the season. I should look it up. He's got 2.45 blocks per game so far this season. So what is your prognostication on how many blocks Alonzo Nelson Adoda will have against VCU?
I'll say 4.
Okay, 4.
I think VCU is going to take a lot of threes.
Yeah. Do you want to just slip
even
right in?
They've got good guards, but I think 4.
Okay. We'll revisit this next week, and we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see how that works.
Oh, you're typing it down over there. So
I did. I've noted it so I can come back to
this
it.
This whole podcast thing is just going to become you holding things I say against me.
Yeah, that's an awesome transition, Aaron. So now that we talk a little bit about Richmond, let's talk a little bit about basketball around the Commonwealth. Things are crazy lately.
In the top three.
In the top three. You could probably argue that things are crazy in like a bad, boring way from 3 down to 4.
4 down to...
Yeah, 4 down to 14. So this week, everyone submitted their ballot for the top teams in the Commonwealth Power Rankings.
Great week for the Commonwealth.
UVA beat UNC and beat Virginia Tech in the worst slaughtering of a Virginia Tech team in the last 25 years, like that. Richmond beat
because VCU.
Oh, by UVA.
By UVA.
Between
okay,
the
UVA yeah,
yeah. In that series. VCU obviously beat a good Dayton team and a good LaSalle team on the road. Both those UVA games, by the way, were at home. So VCU had two good victories on the road. UR beat number 13 UMass at home and then beat...
just dismantled St. Joseph's, right?
Yeah, also at home, though.
Yeah, but still, St. Joseph's team's
pretty good.
Pretty big surprise in the A-10, I think.
And so the question was, who's
going to
rank
the top
three? How do you rank those top three? And the quote from last week from you, Aaron Williams, was, quote, "Even if VCU wins, if Richmond beats UMass tomorrow, I'd probably vote UR second."
Now, see, you say it so emphatically.
I'm just quoting it back to you.
And if you go back and listen to it, I think I mumble around for a little while, like, hey. I go.
This is the words on the page.
VCU going. Say it's something about VCU going 1-1. Mm-hmm. I think a couple things happened this week. So, set the record straight. I voted UVA number one. I think they're playing fantastic basketball right now. I think if there was a rematch, they would beat VCU, especially if they played Mike Toby more. They have improved more since November, probably, than VCU. VCU's improved quite a bit. I think that's why I voted UVA number one. And then I look at UR, and they've had a really, really great A-10 schedule, but it took overtime for them to beat Fordham.
Yeah.
And watching tape of Fordham, which I've been doing, getting ready for this Fordham preview, can't be going to an overtime against a team like Fordham. If you want to be considered the same as VCU and UVA. So I put UR three.
Sure. So I haven't done mine yet.
I want to hear what you have to say.
I haven't done mine yet, and it's tough for me because I like to look at like how you're playing currently, right? Like,
right. That's what I like to look at. It's a power ranking. That's how I do it.
And I don't know. Gosh, I don't know. It's so tough. I just feel like UR's wins are really great. And I feel like UR's wins are really great. I feel like VCU's wins are really good and on the road. Mm-hmm. And I feel like UVA's wins are pretty good, but they're at home.
Yeah, the win over a very good team.
They're not. I mean, they're okay, but and the win over Virginia Tech like shouldn't count. Like that's not a great win. Like they've gotten two wins in the last week, but like both Richmond and VCU had better wins than UVA, I think, in the last week. So
yeah.
I'll
definitely agree with that.
So I think my ballot is going to be insane. I think I'm going to put VCU one because I think those teams both were good and they were on the road. And I do think like BC played like a powerful brand of basketball. I only watched a little bit of the UVA games, but I think I'm going to put Richmond as two because I'm crazy. I don't know. I have a hard time giving so much credence for like a dismantling of Virginia Tech.
Okay,
like,
but all right. Can I disagree with you?
Yeah,
here?
Please right. do.
So on December 30th, Virginia lost to Tennessee, 87-52.
Yeah, I mean,
dismantled.
I understand.
And then they come back in the new year. They beat Florida State 62-50, Wake Forest 74-51, NC State 76-45. They lose to Duke at Cameron by 4 points in a battle.
Yeah,
basically, Rashid Soleiman got the luckiest bounce off the rim ever to decide that game. Then they beat Florida State by 12 points. They beat UNC by 15 points and Virginia Tech by 20.
Yeah,
they've been dominating, albeit a very weak ACC. If that Duke game is anywhere other than Cameron Indoor with magnets and some tricky rim thing it's a conspiracy, then they're 7-0 right now. I mean, they're the third or fourth best team in the ACC, and they've been playing their best basketball recently. And also, their only really bad loss to a bad team is Green Bay, who's all the way up to 49th in KenPom right now. They're having an incredible season. So,
I mean, I hear you. I think you could make a similar case for Richmond being on the rise like that. Like, if you look at Richmond's game post the new year, they have a loss to Florida. And at the time, Florida's RPI right now is 5, I think.
But Fordham took them to overtime.
And they have a bad loss against St. Bonaventure. But LaSalle lost to St. Bonaventure, right?
No, St. Bonaventure's good. Especially, at St. Bonaventure, they have a very good home arena.
And then after those two losses, they have the overtime win against Ford, which you keep saying. They have, and then three home wins. They have home wins against Dayton, Massachusetts, and St. Joe's. And they've been putting together more and haven't been, like, earlier on in the season, they had a lot of these, like, I mean, really, I think all the games they've lost, they led by a good portion at half, and they've just given up these huge leads. So I don't know. I think I might be back at this point where it's a toss-up for me of, like, who's the best. I think the wins, if you look at it just from whose wins are higher quality, it's VCU's, and then Richmond's, and then UVA's.
UMass is kind of due for a loss.
I get. I mean, their RPI now is 7. And
I'll get that out of here.
But they were a good basketball team.
They're a great basketball team. I watched them play for them, and it was... Yeah. Man, they're good. So I think the way to close this is to say the top three teams are pretty good, and they're all playing their best basketball season right now, which is pretty exciting. And two, a lot of things will be settled this week because UVA goes to Notre Dame and to Pitt.
Yeah.
You know, Notre Dame isn't the same team since losing to Ryan Grant, but Pitt's having a great season. They'll probably lose one of those games. And on Saturday, VCU faces UR. So.
And Wednesday.
Wednesday UR plays SLU. At St. Louis. So they got to play in Chaffetz and the Siebel Center all in 1 week. That's
a lot.
We'll see how good they are. Oh, you know. Starting Wednesday, St. Louis is what, 12 or 13 in a row? I think they're
19, ranked 19 right now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're having a heck of a season. They're so good on defense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And like you said, like, I just remember last year, at the end of last year, remember that the last, UR's last tournament game, Coach Mooney got like this two technicals in like
yeah.
3 seconds and was just like so super pissed.
Against Charlotte?
Yeah. And, I don't know. I want to see him like be awesome, and I felt like that was like kind of a little bit of a transformative moment, and it'll be cool. This is going to be another great week for Commonwealth basketball.
I'm with you, and we'll talk about Richmond in a minute. I'll preface it by saying I want the two best teams in the Atlantic 10 to be Richmond and BCU.
Yeah, totally.
I think if they were both top 25, just killing it, that would be really, really exciting. And I don't think VCU fans. I mean, it's good, you know. They were talking about this. I can't remember which game they were talking about this on the TV. Maybe it was Dan Dockage, but it's like the best rivalries. It's you don't hate your opponent.
Yeah.
You respect them.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see some of the VCU fans' rhetoric turn down a little bit about Richmond and really pull for them, because I think that's the, especially with George Mason and Old Dominion struggling so much, I think that's the best thing for, the best thing that could happen to VCU basketball.
Yep. And what's the, so the record now is 1-1 in the A-10 for Richmond and VCU, right? They split last year. Which is awesome. Like, it makes this year's games so much better.
Yeah, I mean, if not, I think VCU would have won, maybe Coach Smart would have only lost to Richmond once in his entire tenure.
Yeah.
You know, but right now he's never won in the Robin Center.
Yeah.
So as much as it is painful to lose that game, but it makes things more interesting.
Totally. All right, you want to move on?
Yeah, so I'll do one quick thing. We opened up Twitter to questions, and feel free to always shoot us questions. We usually record on Mondays. And Nathan sent me a question just asking about, to sort of rehash the circumstances of Coach Smart's first contract extension. So let me preface this by saying, you know, unlike games or, you know, big infrastructure or anything like that, I mean, athletic departments don't like advertising this stuff, but so much, and you know, you don't want to invent what people are saying or whatever. So, but it's kind of nice to remember. So, Coach Smart's getting paid $350,000 a year, and then he goes to the Final Four. First four to the Final Four. It's one of the hottest coaching commodities in the country. And VCU on April 4th, so while the iron was still hot, strikes a new deal with him, taking him from $350,000 to $1.2 million.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this number's only like roughly around. So that 2011, this is kind of crazy. So his base salary was $325,000. And with all the incentives of going to the Final Four, you know, and all these different things, he would have only gotten, or he only got $640,000 compared to like what he gets now. That's pretty amazing. And so kind of the main thing Nathan was asking was like, what was this a contract year for him? Are they trying to guarantee him to stay here? And I just think the really important thing to remember is any of the teams that want Shaka Smart can afford to get him whenever they want to. Because he, you know, right now it costs them $600,000 to $700,000, you know, decreasing by $100,000 increments every single year for the team to buy out.
Yeah,
his contract, and the teams they're talking about paying him now are talking between $3 and $3.5 million per year. So if a Big Ten team, or you know, or UCLA, or any of the teams that have offered him since then want him, they can do it with one swish of a pen.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice to hear, because you really get the sense that he's here for
a while.
Reasons other than money.
Yeah.
And I think he's here for a while. I think every game that he wins, he's more likely to stay, because why would you leave a situation, unless you're John Calipari, why would you leave a situation where you're consistently competing?
Yeah.
And so, you know, and he said a bunch of things along those lines. Don't mess with Happy. You know, you look at Jeff Capel, who wasn't so successful at the next level. You look at Anthony Grant, who's on the mega hot seat this year at Alabama. And, you know, of all those places that VCU coaches have gone on to be head coaches, Coach Smart has had the most success just staying at VCU.
Yeah.
So I think that's and it wasn't a contract year for him. I think VCU, basically the agreement I think they have, this is just entirely speculation, is VCU's going to pay him as much as they possibly can.
Right.
And he's going to stay here and do the best job that he possibly can. And he cares about other things more. Like, I mean, you know, they just recently restructured his contract this year, and a lot of the things in there were more like better food for the teams, more travel funds for recruiting, you know, better pay for assistant coaches within the NCAA rules. So,
yeah.
I don't think the money is secondary to other things, especially since any team could come get him whenever they want to.
Yeah. Cool. Quality of life. Richmond's got the best quality of life in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd say, yeah, maybe he'd be getting paid 2.5 times as much living in L.A., but his dollar sure goes a lot further in Richmond than it does in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and your life would just be terrible because you'd live in Los Angeles. Like,
yeah.
I can't even imagine a worse
Well, thing. And I'll say one more thing about this. I mean, I'm not saying he couldn't. I'm a huge believer in Coach Smart, but he's never had to do a rebuild.
Yeah.
He inherited a situation here where he already had a team that was playing pressure defense. He already had a lot of talent. I mean, he had Larry Sanders and Bradford Burgess and Joey Rodriguez and Brandon Brazell and Jamie Skeen. I mean, all these legacy recruits, Jamie Skeen, but, you know, and a less stressful job. You know, if you go to the Big Ten, you know, the
high
all those guys are great coaches. All those players are great coaches. Those guys get beat up. I mean, just the teams, they just beat each other up in this unbelievable way where maybe it's nicer winning 29 games per year in Richmond.
Yeah. All right. That was good. So if you have any other questions
for us,
please ask.
Yeah.
Ask away. We will talk about them endlessly. Do we want to talk a little bit about Fordham and Richmond, just briefly?
Yeah, this is... I can do the quick recap on both of them. Fordham's a good team. They play a lot of 2-3 zone. They're having a rough season. They're 1 win in the A-10 is over George Mason.
Who's falling apart.
Falling apart, yeah. But they do have the best freshman in the conference, John Sevier, who's averaging 20-some points, and then a great point guard in Brandon Frazier. So they have one of the best backcourts in the country, but they don't really have a lot of size to match that up. You know, part of the reason they're playing the 2-3 zone is because they're playing four-guard lineups. Not really by choice because they're forced to, because they don't really have many big men. This is the kind of game where, you know, you probably get to see 3-4 Doug Brooks 3-point attempts.
Yes.
The quick trigger finger of Jairus Lyles, maybe a little Emerson Burke action, some Torrey Burson action. I want Burke to get in there and get a field goal. He got robbed on he got robbed on that foul call. So I'm in the lobby for that, and you know, that'll put VCU at 5-1 in the A-10, which is a great place to be.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking before the Dayton game, we had to have the conversation of, okay, well, what if VCU walks away 0-2 in these next two games? Like, where does that put us?
The bubble.
And now, like, the conversation's way less stressful, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, this is a battle. This is how I sum it up. The battle for the Brooklyn Buys is going to be a battle of attrition.
Yep.
It's going to be... It's just who can hang in there the longest.
Yeah.
I mean, St. Louis, they're currently 5-0. But I could easily see them winning the conference at 12-4.
Mm-hmm.
I think they won it last year. Were they 12-4 or 13-3?
I don't know.
I think they ended up being 13-3, so VCU was 12-4 and got the number 2 seed. It's just brutal out there. So this is a game you got to win,
yeah,
you know, and get better. You got to continue to get better. Richmond game is probably their toughest game out of the next three games. They have 3 home games in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen what Richmond can do. I mean, just the backcourts that VCU has to face in the A-10 are really, really crazy. I mean, Dayton's backcourt, insane. LaSalle's is really, really good. I mean, Brendan Frazier and John Sevier, even though Fordham's not a very good team, that's an insane backcourt. And now you're talking about Cedric Lindsay and Kendall Anthony.
Yeah.
We've seen what they can do. Richmond was down 7 points with 37 seconds. and forced overtime and won that game.
Yep.
And Kendall Anthony has just, he's had VCU's number. So in the two games last year, he played, I got it here, 27 minutes, and he scored 26 points on the Rams. He had a game
That's
like
crazy.
That 2 years ago. They sort of got a little bit of revenge on him, holding to 11 in the rematch. But he's a really good guard who can score.
A-10 player of the week, I think, this week after after his good week last week.
Yeah, and Cedric Lindsey's, I mean, he's got a chance to be first or second team all conference. He's averaging, what, 19 and 5? Something like that. So, I mean, that's a backcourt that has and could continue to give the Rams problems. And the cool thing for Richmond is, you know, last year they really lacked that big man presence, but they had a whole load of talented freshmen
yep.
who have become sophomores, and it's really turned Richmond into a different beast than last season.
Yeah, and they have, if you remember last year, Derek Williams was injured earlier, mm-hmm. and he was like their one big guy, and he's, I don't know how many minutes he's averaging, but like he's kind of started to play not a lesser role, but like there are just like these freshmen have grown up a year, mm-hmm. and there's just a lot. He's averaging 20 minutes per game this year, and he was averaging 26 last year.
Yeah, and I think people saw him moving into a role where he was going to average 30-something this year. But, I mean, you already talked about Alonzo Nelson Adoda, but they also have Deion Taylor, who's
mm-hmm.
who's really, really good, who can hit three-pointers, and Terry Allen, who can also hit three-pointers, which, you know, I mean, people have described Chris Mooney's Richmond as the Princeton offense on steroids.
Yeah.
And a huge part of that Princeton offense is having a big man who can shoot and pass. And now he's got a whole bevy of big men that can shoot and pass. So, I mean, it's exciting because I think losing Cedric Lindsey will hurt, but I think Richmond's going to be in a good place for years to come.
Yeah. Should be good. I'm excited. I will be in charge of...
That's right.
I'm in charge of live tweeting that game, so if you have complaints, you can direct them towards me and not towards Aaron.
I'll be gone just for one game. You guys can get through it. No, I've decided I'm a senior in high school. Or a senior in...
I'm a senior in high school. Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm a senior in college. And I've been doing this for... This is my fourth season, so I wanted to go to a game as a...
As a normal
student,
person.
As a normal person. So maybe I'll be sitting beside... Standing and screaming beside...
Yeah, don't sit.
Beside you.
So Fordham is Wednesday, January 29th, 7 p.m. It'll be on, I think, CBS 6.3. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
And then the Richmond game is this Saturday, February 1st, 11 a.m., and that'll be on ESPN, too.
Yeah, big
game. So that's two games in a week on ESPN. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that's all I had. Do you have anything else?
No.
All right. If you guys need to get a hold of us, want to send us questions, comments, concerns, I'm Ross Catro on Twitter, at Ross Catro, RossCatrow.
I'm Aaron Williams. You can talk to me at AW Underground, at RVA Ram News, and at VA Power Rankings for the CPR. And we've got Adam Williams, no relation, doing Richmond basketball coverage if you want to follow him, at RVA Spider News.
Yeah.
He does a great job.
And it's super confusing because you're Aaron Williams, he's Adam Williams, and you know, don't get confused.
No relation.
No relation. That we're aware of, I guess. And then you can always send email to rams@rvanews.com. Yeah, and we'll catch you next week. Go Rams.
Go Rams. Martin had a dream. Martin had a dream. Kendrick have a dream.